All right, this case numbers 11F101 and 16F25, both State versus Thomas Deegan. And we're here to try to deal with some pretrial issues. The first is, I think on Friday of last week, which would have been 26th of February, got some filings on behalf of Mr. Deegan, and one of those was I think the document was titled Notice and Demand for Immediate Recusal, which was an I interpreted as a motion to recuse under the trial court rules. Given the timing of that motion as it relates to the hearing today and the trial, I don't think under the rules that I had to respond, but given the nature of the allegations, I felt that I would go ahead and send it on down to the Chief Justice who rules on those matters. And so I faxed that to him yesterday, and Mr. Deegan, here's your copy of my response. And then yesterday, I'm not sure when, we received an order from the Supreme Court, and here's a copy for you, Mr. Deegan, that denied the notice and demand for immediate recusal. So, I don't know, Mr. Rogers, have you received a copy of the order from the Supreme Court?
I believe I did this morning. Yes.
Okay. All right. And also, in those documents that we received on Friday, I didn't get a chance to look at them in depth, but a couple of the titles jumped out at me. One of them was that notice. The other one is can't remember now what it was titled, but it was a request for witness subpoenas to be issued. And if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't compare it to what you had submitted previously, Mr. Deegan, but it appears as though you didn't provide the addresses for the people as I asked you to. But anyway,
I did on Friday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm mistaken as to that. Did the document that Mr. Deegan submitted on Friday, did it contain the addresses?
Three were submitted. Two didn't have it, but the one on Friday did, because I corrected it.
Okay.
Only one didn't. That was 9917, a number that I don't know who it is. But that was in the documents, in the complaint.
I'm having difficulty even picking out a name.
Give it to me.
Oh, is it this right here, maybe?
Give it to me, please.
Maybe at the end.
Okay, Jack Liu, is that one of them?
That's one of them. There's
and
a,
then
there's a whole
Darlene
list.
Deegan.
Oh, there's it's pages before that. Those were amendments.
Oh, those were added.
Yeah, those were added.
Okay.
The body of the document Contains seven or eight, I believe. And then there were those additional ones.
Okay. We've got Philip Hudock, Gene Stoniker, Leonard Hayview, Alicia Lutz-Rollo. Those are four.
The state of West Virginia, the plaintiff. County of Kanawha, the alleged victim. And the state capital, the alleged victim from the original complaint. And then it would have been Jack Liu, Darlene Deegan, Jim Deegan, I believe, was it?
Right. Those were the added ones. And then Hudock, Stoniker, Harview, and Lutz-Rollo.
Along with the state of West Virginia, the county of Kanawha, and the state capital, yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you expect us to issue subpoenas for a building, a county.
Those were alleged victims in the original complaint. I have a copy of that here if we don't have it. What? And I'm allowed to face my accuser.
You indicated purported 9917779
yes,
alleged witness.
That was in the original complaint, and it was not identified who that was.
Mr. Rogers?
9917-7795.
I believe what he's referring to would be the trooper's ID, which would be Trooper Williams, who's listed as a witness.
Okay, so that's not a confidential informant number?
No.
Okay.
I don't have the document that he's talking about.
I have the
me,
criminal complaint
not,
right here.
I don't know of any confidential.
It's at the top. Herein referred to was contacted in reference, and it's just a number. And I don't know who that is, so I couldn't give a name or an address because I have no idea who it is. I'm just trying to face my accusers, that's all.
Madam Clerk, do you see these? Right there. Okay, well, but I mean, do you now?
Yes.
Are those sufficient addresses issued?
To be perfectly honest, I'd rather have it on the subpoena.
Well, is this sufficient to issue the subpoena? Is this sufficient address? That's my question. Not what you want, not what you prefer, but whether that's sufficient. The ones in state.
I guess we
do. Okay. All right. Now, the issue is you've got a couple out-of-state witnesses here. Clerk's office indicates they can't issue witness subpoenas for people from out-of-state.
Okay. I mean, they're vital. I assumed I had the right to compel people to attend.
I thought that there was a way to compel out of state.
To have compulsory process.
There has to be orders that goes through to the other state and all that kind of paperwork, but we don't.
Yeah,
that paperwork has to be submitted to you.
Right.
All right, so there's a procedure for out of state witness subpoenas to be issued, and you have to generate those documents, Mr. Deegan.
Okay.
Now, you can contact these people and have them come.
Well, I think their main concern would be the payment for appearing, as all witnesses are allowed. Payment.
If they come and accept service here, they can still be paid, correct?
They couldn't be paid mileage and all that stuff for going out of state that I'm aware of. I mean, for their travel from another state.
Why not if they accept service here?
I mean, we can check with the Supreme Court, but I've never seen that done.
Okay. And I also, I think I saw Captain Joy's name on there as one of the witnesses.
Also, we need the date and the time and all that. Does he have that in there when we're to issue the witness appearance for?
Trial, March 15th.
So just assume that's when it is.
Well, it was actually for the motions as well.
Well,
because it was all jumbled at one time.
Right. All right. The other thing that I want to make sure you're aware of, Mr. Deegan, if you're not, is that when this goes before a jury, you are entitled to be wearing what's referred to as street clothes as opposed to the jail garb that you're in now. It's up to you as to whether you want to wear it or not. But if you don't have it at the jail, you need to make arrangements to have clothing.
I don't have anything presentable for a jury.
Well, I mean, that's up to you. Sometimes defense counsel will go out and buy clothes for their clients.
Yeah.
That's up to you. But I just want to make sure you are aware that if you want to have street clothes to wear in front of the jury, that you are entitled to, but you need to make those arrangements to make sure that you can have those clothes on.
That's going to be kind of impossible in my situation.
Well, it's not impossible. All you have to do is ask your standby counsel to get you some clothes, and he can get them.
I don't accept him in any way, shape, or form.
Well, then you've got friends, and they can get them, and they can drop them off at the jail or drop them off at the holding center. So it's not impossible.
Okay. Now, can I bring up the issues I have now?
Well, we'll get to the issues that you have. I've got a couple other things that I want to make sure that we get covered. You've made a couple of your filings have to do with transcripts and the recordings. And I want to make sure we get that taken care of. Mr. Rogers, exactly what is recorded? I mean, are these telephone calls or what that are recorded?
That's correct. The first recording would be a conference call among a number of people. And on that conference call is where the allegations of the crime would have been committed by the defendant.
All right. And that has been... That was recorded and then what, downloaded or copied over into something else? What?
That's correct. It was downloaded, placed on a disk, and I have provided a copy of that disk to the defendant.
Okay. He did not provide it to me.
Defendant's counsel at the time, January 19th.
All right. So that's on a CD?
It's on actually a DVD.
DVD. And okay, so that can't be played on a regular CD player.
My office is working on it right now. Whenever I left, we haven't been able to, but I'll, if I can get it to play on a CD player, I will send that to the defendant at North. Well, after talking to the jail, I'll at least send it to Mr. Oshaway.
Okay, so we have a DVD of a conference call.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's just audio, and but it is on a DVD.
And approximately how long is that?
It's approximately 2 hours long.
All right. And is that the only thing then that there is?
There are also jail phone calls. Those cannot, at least that my office is aware of, we were trying, but I don't believe those can be played on there's any way to play those on a CD player.
Are those DVDs then also?
That is actually on a DVD as well, I believe. A copy of an entire CD, DVD of jail calls was provided to the defendant's counsel at the time. At one of the previous hearings, it was requested to transcribe the specific jail calls that the state would use. The state did do that and provided that actually to the defendant.
The jail phone calls, approximately how long are those?
I mean, there's a lot of other conversation going on. I wouldn't plan to use the entirety of the phone calls, but I would say there's probably an hour worth of phone calls that were transcribed.
The total jail phone calls that you've preserved or copied or
that was sent to the defendant?
Yeah.
Hours and hours.
Approximately how long?
I would guess 5 hours, and that's just an approximate.
And then is that all then? Just we have the conference call and then the jail phone calls?
There's also a video of the defendant that was provided to, as it was a video and on disc, it was provided to defendant's standby counsel. I provided it. There is no transcription of that. It is an audio and a video.
And is that on a DVD also?
I believe it's on a DVD as well.
And approximately how long is that?
I believe that's approximately an hour.
Okay. Now, do you know the format that these recordings are on?
I can't tell you off the top of my head, no, Your Honor.
Well, I need that.
Okay.
What about the program that would be needed to play those?
Any program that's needed is contained on the disc and can be played once you insert the disc into a computer that I'm aware of. I believe Mr. Oshway could tell me I'm wrong, but I believe we talked and those discs did work, except for the one video maybe that I haven't talked to Mr. Oshway, but I believe the conference call and the jail phone calls did work on Mr. Oshway's equipment.
Is that correct, Mr. Oshway?
That is correct, Judge. And if I can, add some additional information, last week, pursuant to the direction of the court, I made arrangements with a court reporter to transcribe both of the audio discs.
The conference call and the jail phone call?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's my understanding from that court reporter that work is in progress. And, in fact, today she's supposed to report to me later today, how long that's going to take, when she'll be able to provide me with the transcripts. Based on my conversation with her last week, I believe that the transcripts may well be ready, may well be delivered to me this week.
Now, did you say, Mr. Rogers, that you already had the conference call transcribed?
The conference call is transcribed and the jail phone calls that the state's planning to use.
Okay, and have you given those transcripts to Mr. Oshawa?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Oshawa, have you given those transcripts to Mr. Diggin?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Diggin, you've received those transcripts?
Well, there's no one signing it. I don't know who transcribed it. It's just some words on paper that someone said that no one's standing behind.
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to do, Mr. Diggin, is get it to the point where you can actually get these, evidently three, CDs or DVDs and be able to listen to them and compare them to the transcripts that have been provided. The law in this state, as I understand it, is that when we have recordings such as this, the recordings themselves are the evidence. The transcripts are not introduced into evidence. Many times the transcripts are given to the jury when they listen to the DVDs, but the transcript is not introduced into evidence. Now, that's sort of the normal course. But you have the right to hear these things.
Yeah, because I'm contesting the validity of it.
Right, and I understand that. And you have every right to contest the validity of it. You also have every right to listen to it before you come into court. And that's what I'm trying to find out, what specifically we're talking about in terms of the different conversations and trying to arrange a situation where you can actually listen to it. I've talked to the regional jail. They're going to accommodate you. They're going to let you listen to them. We just have to get the equipment to let you listen to them. That seems to be the problem right now. These things won't be can't be played on a regular CD player. We have to get a computer. And I've been told by the regional jail that the computers that they have that would be available to you don't play these things. So we're trying to get a computer that you can listen to them. And, you know, I mean, take your time on listening to them. Play them over if you want to, and over again if you need to, and compare the transcript to what the recordings say. And that's why I was trying to figure out exactly what we had so that we can figure out. It sounds like we're going to need to get a computer for you that you know, that can play these things. I want to try to get that done so that you can start listening to them sooner rather than later.
Well, with that, there's also the issue of Wednesday I was faxed some things, and it appears that he's taken some sort of an alleged transcript off the internet, off of a blog spot, and he's trying to introduce that as evidence of the phone call. Fax. The same phone call.
Fax from whom?
I don't know. I got a fax came to me, and it was with a bunch of motions titled to a Seska V Trust, all caps, Thomas David Deegan, and it was part of that whole packet, and it was some blog spot claiming to be a transcript on a blog spot just someone threw up, and he appears to be trying to put it into evidence. And so that was after I had submitted that particular demand for the inadmissibility of those transcripts.
Your Honor, there is a transcript that I did send to the defendant. That is not a transcript that the state would admit into evidence. It was just to offer that to the defendant.
It was on the list, his alleged list.
Well, anything that they want to introduce into evidence, at the time that they're wanting to introduce it, you have the right to object. And if it can't be properly identified, then it's not admissible. I mean, that's a basic foundation for the admission of anything, is to properly identify something. And I mean, just a blog off of the internet, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know what you're talking about, but...
Well, I see what's happening is he's trying to bring in prejudicial evidence that's not evidence in any way, shape, or form, and I'm trying to stop that.
Well, I thought he indicated he wasn't going to introduce it.
Well, I don't know why he sent it then and put it on the list. That makes no sense.
Just to provide it to the defendant.
Okay. In the document that you've titled "Challenge to Use of Transcripts of Any Nature and Kind and All Alleged Recordings," there is no requirement that I'm aware of that there be an expert can identify who's on there. Certainly, if you want to have an expert to say it's not you, you can do that. But the jury listens to the voices, and they make the decision. Is there some way that the state's going to have some evidence to identify the voices on there?
To identify the defendant's voice, yes, Your Honor.
Who's that going to be?
Trooper Williams will be able to testify, as well as home confinement, Your Honor.
So, to the extent that your challenge to use of transcripts of any nature and kind and all alleged recordings, to the extent that it seems to imply that there needs to be an expert to identify the voices, I'm not aware of any law in this state that says that there has to be an expert to identify the voices.
I think it was more along the lines of originality and whether it's a copy that is an original or if it's been altered in some fashion. And I think I made that later in the paper. Okay. I made several different arguments.
Well, the accuracy of the phone call is an aspect of it being admitted. In other words, there has to be testimony that it's accurate. There has to be testimony that it hasn't been altered.
And I didn't see any witness on his list that would be able to do that.
Well,
and that's why I'm contesting it.
Right, and you're entitled to do that. But you have to do that at trial, not pre-trial.
I see what's happening, and I'm trying to stop that.
Okay. And the same in terms of the transcript. You know, there's no requirement that I'm aware of in West Virginia law that requires the transcript to be signed, certified. That's why the transcript is given to you early, so that you can compare it to the actual recording. If you think that there's something that needs to be changed in the transcript before it is presented to the jury, if it is ever presented to the jury, then you're able to raise those issues. And because sometimes, and I don't know the quality of them, sometimes the quality isn't very good, and so sometimes there's periods where you can't understand what's on the recording.
I would like to also bring up that this is two alleged cases that I'm doing this for.
Right.
Okay, and so, you know, some of these things are appropriate at this time because the jury's not involved in that for some reason.
You mean on the motion to revoke your home?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have to bring it up when we're trying to, when the evidence is being introduced.
Well, now,
because I haven't heard it. I haven't heard the transcript. I mean, I haven't heard the recordings. I haven't seen the transcript.
Right, and I know. And the reason a lot of it's being introduced and not being able to be proven is to be prejudicial in nature. And that's what I'm trying to stop.
I understand.
Because I see exactly what's happening.
Mr. Oshaway, have you talked to the people at the regional jail about being able to get Mr. Deegan those discs or DVDs?
I talked to them not in connection with this case, but with other cases that I was not allowed to leave computer discs, DVDs, or CDs with my clients when they were in jail, that if I wanted them to review that material, I would bring my laptop to the jail and play the recordings while I was with the client in the interview room. Typically, these recordings are not hours and hours long. They're fairly short, but. That's not the case here, but the jail has always been very careful to make it clear to me that, you know, I couldn't leave a compact disc or a DVD with a client.
Has the state taken any steps to make sure that this defendant can listen to the actual DVDs prior to trial?
The state's off. The state has submitted all those discs to Mr. Oshaway. As the state, as Mr. Oshaway stated, an attorney can take a computer and have their client listen to these discs, but it's other than that, this, you know, the state has no. Our office has talked to the jail. The jail has not allowed. I mean, we can't even send staples or paper clips into the jail. But it's the state's position that we've offered him to standby counsel, and if the defendant wanted to listen to him, then standby counsel could play those for the defendant at the jail.
The conference call, the jail phone calls, and the video, is the state, I mean, I don't know what the basis of obtaining those are. I mean, was this a conference call? Was this a, what's sometimes referred to as a wiretap? I mean, does there need to be some kind of a hearing to determine a threshold legality of obtaining any of this information?
I would leave it to the court. What it, there would be.
How am I supposed to know if I don't know the basis?
I'm going to inform the court of some of the details, Your Honor. I would have, hopefully, there would be Mr. Mihal from the FBI. Trooper Williams could also testify to it, but Mr. Mihal from FBI would testify to the extraction of the conference call. It was not a wiretap, and he would testify to the authenticity of the disc. As far as the credibility of the disc, because it was not a wiretap, there are other pieces of evidence in such a hearing that the state could prove to the court, such as jail phone calls and this other video that corroborate the storyline, if you will, or the statements and the topic of conversation that was on this conference call.
Well, if not a wiretap, how was it acquired?
The FBI extracted it from the Internet.
I mean, they listened to it as it was occurring? Is that what you're saying?
Not this, not the phone call, not the conference call that the state would be admitting. No, Your Honor.
It was taped on the?
That's correct.
On the Internet?
That's correct.
Hence my motion.
Is that the transcript that you provided to Mr. Deegan? Was a copy of this conference call?
That is one of the transcripts that has been provided to the defendant. Yes, Your Honor.
The phone call was, what was the term you said?
Extracted. That's correct.
Is it the state's position that they did not need a search warrant?
It's the state's position that there was no search warrant needed, yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Deegan, you know, do you have a basis or a...
I have no idea what's happening in this matter.
Did the jail phone calls occur after this conference call?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I've had some testimony in another case about some of these jail phone calls. I mean, is it just a normal recorded jail phone call?
Yes.
And then what about the video?
The video would not be used in the state's case in chief. it could be used for impeachment possibly, or if it was needed for any other hearing, and that's the purpose that it was provided to the defendant. But the video is of the defendant actually talking about this conference call.
Where did the video come from?
The video was also online.
So it was also extracted by the FBI?
That's correct.
What do you mean by extracted?
That was the term that was used. I mean, I guess it would be the same, downloaded. The FBI took the information that was online and...
So they went to a website, saw something, and they just downloaded it.
That's correct. I would have Mr. Mihoff from the FBI to testify in more depth as to what he did, but I believe that's the basically what happened.
Mr. Diggins, do you have anything else you want to say about the transcripts or the recordings?
I mean, I don't know what to say. I haven't heard them.
Right, and I'm trying to work on letting you get through.
And I mean, you know, like I said, somebody did a transcript. He pulled another one from the blog. He sends it. You know, this is very, very odd and strange behavior by the prosecutor, to say the least. I mean, I have not been afforded the right to prepare anything at all, if I even need to prepare a defense. I mean, I'm looking at almost 6 months now, confined, without being able to see the evidence actually against me or hear it.
Okay, well, I don't know what else I can do at this point in terms of the transcripts and the CD or the DVDs. Mr. Oshaway, do you have those with you?
I do not. They are with the transcription, the court reporter.
Okay. So if we got a mechanism for Mr. Deegan to listen to these things today or tomorrow, how are we going to get the actual DVDs Can the state make another copy?
I can make another copy.
How long will it take for you to make another copy of the conference call, the jail phone calls, all 5 hours of them, and the video?
I would half an hour probably.
Okay. How about doing that then immediately after this hearing, so that we at least have that, and then we have to try to figure something out in terms of listening to these things and getting something to where the defendant can listen to them. Okay. Mr. Diggins, you have anything else you want to take care of before we get into your motions?
Well, actually, yes, and I needed to address the motions as well. But I have evidence of two different states of West Virginia, and I'm trying to find out which one is moving against me. It's a contract, lease purchase between two different states in the same contract. And so I'm trying to find out which state of West Virginia is actually moving against me. And I have that right here, if you would like to see it.
I don't need to see it.
Book 250, page 667.
If you want to put something on the record, you can put something on the record.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm confused.
Anything else you want to say on that issue?
On that specific issue of the state? No. But I do have some other things I wanted to bring up because it may affect other things.
Well, I'd like to go issue by issue just so that we can keep this all.
Okay. Do you want to stop and look at that, or?
I don't need to stop and look at anything that you have. You address that issue somewhat in your motions.
Well, but I don't think I had. I just got this.
Okay. Well, then let me see it. Mr. Rogers, anything you want to say with regard to this?
I'm not even sure if this is a motion, but the state doesn't believe there's a basis in the law, and the state would move to dismiss.
I didn't motion. I said I don't understand that there's two states in the same contract, and I'm not sure which one's moving against me and which and what their authority is. That's what I'm trying to ascertain because I don't understand.
What you've shown me is a contract of lease purchase.
Correct.
Between the West Virginia Economic Development Authority and
upper and lowercase state of West Virginia.
And the state of West Virginia.
All caps, which are two different.
Acting by and through the Department of Administration.
So I'm confused. If it's the same entity, it would need to enter a lease purchase contract if it was the same entity. So that's why I'm confused. I don't understand. Okay. Now that I see there's two states of West Virginia, I'm trying to ascertain which one is moving against me or against the trust.
Why don't you go ahead and make your argument with regard to this original contract that you've raised in some of these motions?
Are you talking about Article 3, Section 2?
Whatever you're referring to in terms of your
I have many motions.
You've used...
The original contract is the Constitution for the United States of America.
Okay.
That's the original contract. The supreme law of the land, according to Article 6. Yes, the Constitution, the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance of, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. All executive and judicial officers, both the United States and the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. The biggest one I see is the fact of Article 3, Section 2. It says, in all cases, and those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. So it seemed to me that because the state is a party here, that we are in the wrong court, according to the original contract, which all judges and executive officers are bound to uphold as the supreme law. And so I see a conflict here, whereas this should be heard in the Supreme Court of the United States, because the state is a part. It says state of West Virginia. Absolutely. And so I'm a little concerned if we're not following this, then I'm concerned is this court not of a government, and is it more of a private for-profit contractor providing a government service of some kind? Because our Article 6 does state this is the supreme law of the land right here.
Anything else?
I have many motions. I didn't know we were lumping them all together at once.
I want you to speak to your allegation.
Original contract violations? Okay. That was contained Amendment 1. No law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I cannot serve two masters. And only serve one, and that's God. That's who I serve. I'm a child of God. I'm an heir of God, as I've stated over and over again. And it appears that you're trying to make me adhere to a system, a secular system, that goes against my most firm religious beliefs. And it entails using artificial entities and corporations and creatures of the mind that don't exist and giving them parity with a live man. And that goes against my most firm religious beliefs. And I've brought up much of his word on all of my documents showing where it's violating my beliefs. Then we have abridging the freedom of speech. It doesn't say the legislator can abridge it if they feel like it. It says it cannot be abridged. And the alleged crime that I'm charged with is a speech crime. And so they're making a crime which is against Miranda versus Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved. There can be no rulemaking or legislation which abrogate them. And I'm being charged. I've been sitting 6 months almost in a military prison for something that is a violation of Amendment 1. Amendment 4, right of the people to be secure in their homes. Okay, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. And in this case, they had the wrong address. I've proven it by the Postal Service itself. Wrong address, wrong name. And there was nothing in the warrant that I've got a copy of that where it stated things that it was going to seize. And so that's an outright violation of Amendment 4. Amendment 5, I'm being held in a military tribunal right now, and that is according to Executive Order number 10834, August 21st, 1959, and 24 Federal Regulation 6865, that a yellow-fringed American flag is a military tribunal flag, flying under the authority of the commander-in-chief, and denotes an admiralty maritime jurisdiction, which is not the law of the land. Admiralty jurisdiction or the maritime military would require a contract of some kind, international in nature, or I would have to be in the armed services. I've never been in the armed services. I have no international contracts. I have a right, Amendment 6, to a speedy and public trial. So far, it has not been very speedy. This motion for revocation, according to the rules, 32.1, says prompt. I was not notified of a revocation for over 45 days. And then it's dragged on this long because the state has dragged its feet over and over in turning over what it has to under the rules. Why it's fighting its own rules, I can't understand it. I have the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him. That's why I've called the state of West Virginia, which is the alleged plaintiff. I've called the alleged victims, Kanawha County, state capitol. I have a right to be confronted by them. The state is trying to mix up the argument saying that the trooper is the victim, and the trooper's the victim. No, he's not the victim. That's not what the paperwork says. Part of the bail agreement that I did not sign because the name was wrong and the address was wrong states the state capitol and Kanawha County are the victims. And so I don't see why everyone's fighting me so much on trying to get them. I mean, how do you bring two creatures of the mind into court? You can't. And yet I'm being forced to have to do that because they're the victims. I have the right to face my victims. I have the right to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in my favor. I have the right to the assistance of counsel for my defense, which we had discussed earlier. And I think that a lot of these have been misconstrued by the courts without proper authority under the original contract for case law and have misconstrued these things from their original intent. And I will stand by the fact that the ones that I am subpoenaing, Gene Stallnecker, Bill Hudock, Darlene Deegan, Alicia Rutz-Lolo, and Leonard Harview have in fact been my assistants of counsel from the beginning. They are the ones that did what I needed done from the very beginning. Excessive bail should not be required. My bail is set in this alleged case at $300,000 cash, which is 12 times the maximum fine. I would say that's highly excessive. I have been confined 23 hours a day to a cell. That's cruel and unusual punishment. The enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others. I have the right to be left alone. And so far the state is not following that. And that's one of the most precious rights we have. Is the right to be left alone. We have the issue of the 13th Amendment. We have an original one that's passed that I have proven by way of over 30 different publishings in the states, and that is the Titles of Nobility Act that restricts those that have a title of nobility from serving in government. And I have an esquire sitting next to me. I have an esquire at the other table that is a title of nobility under the Queen. It's below a knight. That is the title of nobility. Now, even if we don't accept that as fact, which I've proven in the Supreme Court of Appeals, we go with the original one, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime. I haven't been punished. I haven't been convicted. I'm being punished. I'm in solitary confinement. Solitary confinement, trying to defend myself against commercial charges, according to Code of Federal Regulations 72.11. All crimes are commercial. That's monetary in nature. We have Amendment 14. No state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So far, we haven't had much due process because it hasn't done anything. The state has continuously delayed and denied my rights. Speedy trial. This should have been over with. If they had a case when they arrested me, they shouldn't have arrested me if they weren't ready to go to trial. It's not contemplated that you sit and rot somewhere. And you can't deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. And the equal protection is that these amendments have been violated over and over again, quite clearly. I started to set forth the International Treaty Declaration of Human Rights, where I found over 25 violations right there alone, too. And because of Article 6 here, it's also the supreme law of the land because it's a treaty made in pursuance of. But I don't think I need to go into that. I think I've made the case here that there's no jurisdiction here. And even if there was at some point with this many violations of the original contract, I can't see under federal case law how the court has retained any jurisdiction. And all of these things have been unopposed by the state. They haven't answered any of those allegations. And so at this point, they have agreed by their own silence that these things have happened. And so I'm not understanding who's moving against me. Is this a commercial matter? Is this a trust? Is this an actual crime at common law, or are they exercising malum prohibitum jurisdiction that they don't have contractual authority for? I don't understand what's happening here. It's not in compliance with the contract. The contract is what allows these entities to exist.
Anything else?
I have nothing else because the state has not opposed anything I've said ever. So I have nothing else to say on that.
Rogers, anything you want to say?
Just to a few of the points, Your Honor. The court's already ruled on jurisdiction. The Supreme Court has ruled on free speech, and it's clear that the state can charge someone with terroristic threats. As far as a speedy trial goes, the defendant was indicted in January. We're still within that term. And the other ones, it doesn't sound like there's a motion there. There's no basis in law, and the state would move to dismiss.
Mr. Deegan, anything you want to say in response to anything that Mr.
He's going with things that go against the original contract, and it says the supreme law of the land. It doesn't say unless a court somewhere says, and that's what his excuse is that the courts have ruled that you can make speech terrorism and that, you know, that they just indicted me. That has no bearing on the original contract. It doesn't say except for, it says this is the supreme law of the land. And the amendments are very clear in what they say. Article 3, Section 2 is very clear. It doesn't say the state shall be a party except when the prosecutor says no. It says the state is a party. The Supreme Court has original jurisdiction. I mean, these are quite clear. The words are clear. A written document does not change meaning over time. That's why it's written. It's written so that it is set in stone. And his arguments have no basis. Saying that a court can overrule this means that they are not operating under the original contract. And the federal courts have ruled that when a judge violates his oath, not only is he warring with the Constitution, but he loses all rights to move forward, jurisdiction, in the matter. All I want is the rules of the game, because I don't see the rules. Everybody's making up rules as go along. I'm looking at the contract that says it's supreme law of the land. Article 6, the supreme law of the land. It doesn't say unless someone doesn't like it.
Anything else? Sorry?
No.
Okay. In terms of which state of West Virginia, of course, the contract or lease that you showed me was apparently a lease between agencies. Some of these arguments are so, I don't know how to phrase it, against common sense that it's hard to rule on them. But the state of West Virginia has different agencies, and sometimes the different agencies contract with each other for different things, and that's just the way it is. The state of West Virginia is the moving party in this case, I don't know how to say anything other than that.
Well,
in terms of some kind of an original contract and the state needing to prove an original contract, that is simply not true. The law in this state is clear that the state must prove the elements of the offense as set out in the statute, and that is what the state has to prove. And there is no law that says the state has to prove any kind of an original contract. Argument you're making about when the state is a party that has to go in front of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. Of course, that is contrary to the laws and the tradition of all 50 states of this country. It's simply the state of West Virginia because it is the local government that brings criminal cases, and this is the way it's always been. And so, in terms of the wrong address, Mr. Rogers, was there a search warrant in this case?
Yes, Your Honor, there was.
Did it have an incorrect address on it?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe the address, and it's part of a report from the state police. I do not have a copy of that search warrant. The search warrant, nothing obtained from the search warrant, is going to be used in this case.
So the state's not intending to either introduce the search warrant or any fruits of the search?
That's correct.
So wrong address on the search warrant appears to be moot. In terms
it
of
was
the
on the arrest warrant, too, I said. It was on both.
Okay. In terms of the well, an incorrect address on an arrest warrant is not relevant because it's the person that is arrested, not the location. In terms of the amount of bail, the issue of bail has never been presented before this court. The defendant was arrested on a warrant. The bail, I'm assuming, I haven't even looked at that, but I'm assuming the bail was set when he was originally charged. And then the case, of course, was pending in front of the magistrate court until the preliminary hearing. It was then bound over. When it was in a bound over stage, it was in front of a different judge, not me. I didn't get this case until mid-January of this year. And and there's been no one has raised the issue of excessive bail. So until you said, Mr. Deegan, how much the bail was, I didn't even know how much the bail was because unless it's raised, it's not an issue that I need to be aware of. And that's one of the things that Mr. Oshaway raised at a hearing or two ago some things that he would have done if he had, been given the authority to. And if he's not, that's fine. I mean, I don't care. I'm just wanting the record to be clear that the issue of excessive bail has never been brought before this court. Being in the cell for 23 and a half hours, again, I've never investigated this, but when I was talking to the jail trying to make some arrangements for you to be able to listen to these DVDs, they mentioned something about that you didn't sign some documents out there needed to be signed for administrative purposes.
Trying to.
So if you're not willing to sign the stuff and comply, you're in solitary confinement of your own choosing. In terms of due process, this case has gone through the normal procedure in terms of a warrant. A magistrate court issued a warrant, a probable cause hearing over there, and then it was bound over and it was presented before a grand jury. You were indicted in January 2016, and if all goes as planned, you'll have a trial starting in about 2 weeks. Sometimes these things take longer than you or I want them to take, but that is the procedure that is set. And in terms of jurisdiction, I've already ruled on those issues, I don't need to rule on those issues again. In terms of the nature of this offense, it is a criminal case.
What's the jurisdiction, the nature, the cause of it, the jurisdiction of law, so that I know how to
amend. I've already ruled that this court has subject matter jurisdiction,
no,
geographic jurisdiction.
No, the jurisdiction that the case is. Is it common law? Is it admiralty? Is it equity? Each one has a different defense.
It is statutory. It is the statute that you've been alleged to have violated.
Is that,
all right.
Is that contractual?
I might as well do this now, just so that everybody is aware. there, you know, these issues have been raised in other jurisdictions before, and some of these cases are not reported, but they're still there in the law, but not being reported, they're not mandatory precedent. But anyway, let's see, we've got a Court of Appeals of Texas, the 14th District in Houston, and actually that's January 7, 2016, decided issues that that you've raised, Mr. Deegan, and have dismissed those types of issues. Let's see, we have a Superior Court of Pennsylvania in December of 2015.
What types of issues are we talking about? I'm lost here.
The United States District Court for the District of Hawaii. The United States District Court for the District of Maryland. The United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, which is the area covering West Virginia. Court of Appeals of Ohio, Second District, Montgomery County. The United States District Court for the South Dakota, Southern Division. United States District Court for the Northern District of Ohio. And the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which is out west. All those, oh, there's another one. United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio. And that's all these original contracts.